Hey, it's Jess, and welcome to The Heartstrong, a podcast where we explore navigating the challenges in our lives. It's my personal mission to guide you towards your greatest potential. So come along with me as we explore living with courage, or as I put it, living heartstrong. Welcome to the Heartstrong Podcast. On today's episode, I'm sitting down with Mina LaRonde. Mina is a nurse at Boston Children's Hospital in the cardiovascular program, where she spent most of her time in the cardiac intensive care unit. For the last 27 years, she's taken care of some of the sickest children in the country, and she's walked countless families through the joys and pains of having a child with congenital heart disease, and my family is one of them. Mina has shared some of the hardest, most intimate, and beautiful moments with me and my family, and so I am so thankful to call her a friend and to share this time with her. Mina is a wife and a mother, and she's also a cancer survivor, and so today we're going to talk about hope. Where we can find it, how we can access it, and why it matters, even in the most dire of circumstances. And so welcome to the podcast, Mina. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm thrilled to be here, Jess, and I'm thrilled to call you friend after all these years.
Yes, yes. So I want to talk a little bit about your background, just because I think you're such an interesting intersection of hope, I think, in this, and that's why I asked you on here today to talk about this. But tell us about your background as a nurse and in the cardiac ICU, and like what you do for those people maybe listening who don't know anything about a cardiac ICU.
Okay, no, I'd love to. So I started at Boston Children's right out of nursing school. Initially, I was on the cardiac floor and then transitioned over to the cardiac intensive care unit probably a year and a half into my practice. And, you know, I think over the last few decades, I've really been able to firsthand witness how the science around supporting kids with congenital heart disease has really developed with innovation, with perfecting surgical techniques. So it's really been an incredible journey to watch from the outside in, from a clinical standpoint. Right now, the cardiac ICU has just expanded. We're up to 42 beds.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we take care of kids anywhere from newborns to adulthood. Our newborns are delivered next door, similar to the way Ethan came into our world, and come over and are managed both medically and surgically in our ICU. And then we follow those kids, should they need additional care, through their pediatric years into their adolescent years and now into adulthood. So a lot of these patients didn't survive 20, 30 years ago. And so now we have kids with abnormally structured hearts that are adults, and they need, you know, their care to be taken care of by people who understand their heart disease. So we manage kids like that. We have kids that come in with acquired heart disease, particularly post-pandemic. We did take care of some patients that had the inflammatory cardiac response. So that was something that was very new for us. But it is a very large nursing staff with a lot of years of experience. And I think it requires people that are very dedicated to knowledge building, to thinking quickly and safely on their feet, but also people that can connect with families and with kids and meet them regardless of the developmental milestones that they're meeting or not meeting or where they're at in their growth and development, but really to collaborate with families from all over the country and sometimes all over the world.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been doing this a long time and you've seen people from all over the world, like you said, and from all walks of life and from, you know, something as a simple repair to a complex repair where they're back many times. And so I guess if you could kind of think like in a macro sense as we get started, like what are some of the insights or ideas that kind of come to the top of your head when it comes to the topic of hope, as you've sort of observed families who are really coming to you in a really challenging moment over the years?
So I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think recently, Jess, you posted something about hope that talked about hope not being denial. And I think, you know, you start off as a nurse at a very young point in your life. Maybe you've experienced a lot in your life. Maybe you haven't. I think for me, I had generally the kind of upbringing that most people have. I grew up, I had challenges with friends, didn't really have many sick people in my family, didn't really have any real tragic experiences, if you will. And so for me as an early on in my nursing career, I think defining hope and mixing it with denial was probably something that I did very often. I think as I progressed through my years of nursing experience and really started to understand that connection with families and to almost get a little better at it, right? Because with experience, you get a little better at it. I started to realize a lot of what you said, that some people might identify hope as denial, but I think you almost have to go through all of the possibilities of things not working to really understand what hope is. And so I really feel like as a nurse, connecting with families is understanding that hope comes from people who have really explored a lot of different scenarios of things that could go drastically wrong, or maybe they have gone wrong. And how do we not only find promise in the things that we're doing and the decisions that people are making for their children, but also how do we connect that mind-body connection, right? Because hope is so much of that mind-body healing, which I think plays a huge role into patients surviving or thriving, or for families getting through some of the hardest things that they're ever going to go through in their life.
So talk to me a little bit more about what you just said about how the mind-body connection impacts like the survival of a patient or their success as a patient. Like what, tell us more about that.
Well, I think, you know, from a clinician standpoint, there's a very fine line between balancing what we know, what we've researched, what data speaks to, but also understanding that if you solely base everything on data, you're kind of taking away hope and taking away that ability for the mind and body to connect, right? So there's that balance. And I just don't think you can have too much of one without having the other. I think, you know, in a lot of this reading that I've done, you could look at science and say that, you know, being sick causes stress to your body. It raises cortisol. There's all these things in our life and these outside triggers that raise cortisol. And so if you're not able to kind of balance out that mind-body connection and really hone in on willing your body to heal and willing your child's body to heal as many families go through, you're kind of denying yourself that ability to work with the medicine to get yourself better. So I very firmly believe in that. You know, I can't say what it's like for a heart mom or dad and how they feel that goes for their child. But I certainly think in my own experience as a patient, you know, there's lots of things that your body goes through with going through cancer, but your mind's got to make your body work with that medicine to get better and really envision this path to healing. And, you know, I think over the last decade or so, we've really incorporated a lot of neurodevelopmental principles into the care we provide and really incorporating a lot of those ancillary services, specifically like what the foundation has done with music therapy, to really hone in on calming those cortisol levels and calming that stress level and allowing kids to not only experience joy, but to have that joy lead to more of that mind-body connection and enhanced healing. I very much believe in that. I don't have all the data to support it. I think you can pull it from a lot of different disciplines, but I personally think that when I see a child receiving music therapy or, you know, some sort of play therapy or something that brings them joy, that's enhancing their healing. It's not just
so interesting.
Body of life, you know, it's really letting that body reset and enhance that mind-body connection.
Well, that's really interesting because I recorded a podcast and I mentioned to you before we got on air with a friend of mine who has gone through cancer and has taken a really innovative approach to her cancer care. But she was sharing with me, and I forget the name of the book, but it was like Radical Remission, I think was the name of it. But the 9 things, and you may have read it.
Yes.
A lot of them were not necessarily about medicine. They were about, you know, mindset and all of those things. And I think it's very interesting that you bring that up because as parents, we have these even babies, right, who are going through this. And it's like you think they can't maybe do that for themselves, but it's like our approach and our energy that we bring to the challenge before us. It could be anything. In this case, it's presenting your child for heart surgery. How important it is for us as parents to sort of have that, think about our mindset and think about the energy that we're bringing to the space and how that can facilitate healing or not, I think is something that is, I've thought of that, I guess, but not exactly in the way that you mentioned it. That's very interesting.
Well, you know, I mean, you can't tell a child, like, connect your mind body, right? Like, they don't have the capacity to understand that. But I think something that we have very, very much focused on through a variety of different platforms within our heart center is really empowering parents to parent in the ICU specifically. Mm. So, I mean, you know, all too well, there's a lot of technology around this tiny little baby. There's machines, there's lines, there's all these things. But the benefit of that simple hand to the forehead and to the baby's feet and just kind of breathing with your baby, I really think that that enables that child to have that mind-body connection, right? It connects a parent to their baby and it enhances that healing, right? It enhances mm-hmm. protecting that brain from all of those outside triggers and really allowing the body to heal. So when I talk about mind-body connection, I think it's obviously not something that a child can do for themselves, but I think not only as parents and empowering parents, but as clinicians, we have this opportunity if a parent has to step out to really connect with a parent, understand what they want for their child's healing, and almost provide that in the care that we provide and make that part of our medicine and part of our, specifically our nursing care. You know, for me, I went into nursing not because I came from a long line of nurses. I went into nursing because I felt this need to connect with people and to heal. And, you know, I think whether we are in the role of mom or friend or wife or nurse or whoever, we can't save the world. That's impossible. But I think we have such an opportunity in our professional and our personal lives to take little measures that just help our mind and body connect and get us through really challenging times, whether it's in real life or whether you're the patient or the baby in the ICU. And I think for me personally, I'm thrilled that we've gotten to a point in healthcare, maybe I'm just in a silo, but I think in certain aspects of healthcare, I think we've gotten to a point where that's how we heal and that's how we empower people. So I feel like that's a huge part of the way I approach my nursing care at this point in my career.
Do you think that people who are younger in their career than you or are newer to medicine are arriving with that same perspective, or is that something that we're teaching?
I think we are striving to, I can only speak for where I am. We are definitely trying to teach that. I think it's really hard to be a young professional in healthcare right now because I think a lot of their training years and that time where you start to understand what it's like to interact with people was taken away during the pandemic, right? So when I was in nursing school, I was in clinical once a week. I was terrified. You know, the drive-in with my friends, we're all sitting there just hoping for the best, right? And hoping we have a nice patient that doesn't mind having a nursing student in there. But I think it's really hard now for kids because I think, again, like they lost a lot of that one-on-one in-person education time. And I think in general, they're living in a world that unless they have forces around them that are kind of encouraging that ability to interact, it's a very different world, right? I mean, people don't, you know, meet their partners, you know, out at a restaurant or a bar one night. A lot of that's done online. And I think it just alters the way you communicate with people and how you connect with people. And I think that that art, specifically in nursing, is something we're honing in on and encouraging our young nurses to do. I can't speak to other professions, but as a mom to teenage kids, you know, and I feel like we have, you know, a strong foundation in communication in my household. But it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of effort to say, pick up the phone and call somebody and have that conversation instead of snapping it or texting it. And I feel dated when I say that. I feel like I just aged myself like another 20 years. But I think generationally, it's just very hard. You know, the beauty of the pandemic was being able to do things like this remotely. But I think you and I just came in at a point in our lives where we're used to interacting. I think for a lot of people, starting off this way is going to be really challenging for them, and they're really going to have to put that added effort into that human connection. I think I'm fortunate enough to be in an environment with a lot of seasoned colleagues. So
you are
try to teach by osmosis and have that connection modeled. But I think it's probably really hard for young nurses that are in environments where there's been a huge turnover. And so they only have people within a 5-year range of themselves. And unless you have someone exceptional who's really making that effort, I'm sure it's challenging.
Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting what you just said before about the importance of this sort of mind, body, and almost like spiritual connection to our patients and to one another, because, you know, like Brené Brown says, like, we're wired for connection as human beings. Like, that is what we're wired for. And it's not a connection over the phone. It's a connection with one another. And if that's healing from a provider to a patient or a parent to a child, then that's also healing between human beings. And I think that's such an interesting thing to think about, where we do live in this disconnected world. But if you want to also bring it back to hope, it's like, I think we have hope because we thrive off one another's energy for that. And that's like a human sort of thing that we get from one another. And if we're not connected, it's harder to have.
Yeah. I mean, I think the beauty of where I work is that, you know, we never shut down. So as much as we're masked and it was hard to see one another's face. I mean, I have to tell you, this week we lifted our mask mandate and I'm walking around to look at people's ID badges. I don't actually know what they look like. But I think what I've felt, you know, specifically since the masks were lifted, was this joy that has come, and like almost hope being the thing that got us there, that we knew that we'd be there. But particularly during the pandemic, I think, you know, where hospitals didn't shut down, I think nursing specifically really was in a good place, in that nurses still came to work. They still had to connect with patients. It might be a little tricky, and younger nurses might need a little bit more support in how to interact with their peers, with their, you know, with other physicians, but specifically with families. That I think, you know, nursing is actually probably pretty fortunate in that we haven't really shut down. I think other professions that really like went remote and are still remote, it must be really challenging. But I have hope, no pun intended, that, you know, this generation of nurses is really just going to thrive and grow in their profession and continue to connect with patients and families. I think another thing I've observed generationally is that kids are coming out of college taking much better care of themselves than we did. I mean, my friends and I in our early 20s were not hitting yoga classes and, you know, CrossFit places. So I think they're probably coming in a little bit more connected to their own mind-body connection than I necessarily was in my 20s, just by nature of being a generation that seems to do better with self-care. So I think that at some point, with the right kind of tools, they'll gain that perspective and that connection to other people, because they understand what that connection means for them, having missed out on some of it during the pandemic and now being able to interact with people completely.
So earlier you mentioned, we mentioned that hope is not denial, that's, you know, there's this balance, right, of what hope is. And so I'm just wondering, when you have families that come in maybe for the first time, how do you think they define hope? I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think that they're, you know, wide-eyed and that they think that they're there and you guys are just going to fix it and everything's going to be fine? Or do you think that they're coming into it pretty sober-eyed, knowing that they're hopeful and yet that's tempered with the reality of what they're facing?
Well, I think the first type of family that you mentioned, we definitely, you know, see a lot of, right? Like, they come in, we're going to fix it. I think no matter how much preparation you do for a family, particularly with a child that's diagnosed prior to their born, until you're kind of walking in there, it's hard to kind of envision what that's all going to look like. So I think for some families, they do come in with that expectation that we're going to walk them through it and fix it. And most of the time that happens.
You do. Yeah.
You know, so I think that there's that, but I do think that there's families that come in and are hopeful that things are going to go fine. But I think they're also grieving the loss of what should have been a very different experience. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as nurses, particularly I can speak for myself, I try to let them grieve and lose, you know, have those feelings that, especially for a younger mom, you know, and with social media, you're seeing people with, you know, their gender reveals and all of these things mm-hmm. that make this whole experience like this expectation level that's up here. And so when you're not meeting those expectation levels, it can feel really lonely. But I think what's important is to acknowledge those feelings of fear and concern and uncertainty, because I don't think without feeling those, you can truly have the hope that you need to be the best parent that you can be while your child's sick, whether it's to that one child or other children or your family. I don't think that people come in with a whole bunch of denial. I do think the majority of our families come in with hope. I just think it takes different forms. And I think it goes through a lot of different changes and processes before they kind of understand how they're balancing a lot of those emotions and maintaining hope.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's like we can start out with hoping for something, some specific thing. And as we walk through the process that we're in, what we hope for might change. But we have to allow ourselves to take those steps through the process to then to also like embrace and accept what we have, because sometimes that, like you said, is a really hard thing to do. And then find that the thing that we're hopeful for is maybe a little bit different, and then it's continually adjusting that and then embracing it and adjusting it and embracing it. And I think that's really a hard thing to do as humans, because it's just really complicated. And it is, I think, as a parent, there is a lot of grieving that goes through that. And just as any person. So like when you think about your own illness that you have experienced, if you don't mind sharing a little bit about it, like what do you feel hopeful for? And how do you find hope in your own life as you kind of look at your life and your future?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was diagnosed first with breast cancer, it was on a routine 40-year-old mammogram, you know, just my kids were off to school, made my doctor's appointments. So it really caught me off guard. I didn't have any symptoms or anything that I had noted on an exam that was concerning. And so it was very early stage cancer. It was non-invasive. I took a very aggressive approach surgically, followed all the instructions of my doctors. And I had a less than, you know, 1-2% chance of recurrence at 5 years. And as I approached my 5 years and noted that, you know, there were things about my exam that were different, all of a sudden I was waking up one day with what they first said was stage 2 cancer. And all of a sudden it was like, well, you know, it's just going to be a simple surgery. Well, actually now it's invasive and it's in your lymph nodes and we need to be more aggressive. And so when I started to reflect on hope between those two different, you know, experiences, I think the first time my hope was just get it out, put it behind me, be aggressive, move forward, all good. And the second time, I think, you know, as the whole process changed, I started off with like, okay, simple surgery, we'll do that. All right, little radiation. Oh, wait, now it's like 8 weeks of chemo. Oh, wait, you know, and things started changing. I found myself kind of waking up and looking around and thinking to myself, what just happened? Like the wheels are kind of falling off of this bus. And, you know, as someone who had been involved in the cancer community, you see all of these signs, particularly during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, of like hope and this and that and positivity. And I really had to kind of dig deep and say, all right, like it's going to be a real challenge to get through this. There's the physical part of what I need to put my body through that I don't have many choices on, right? I'm a mother to young kids. I've just got to check my boxes, do what I've got to do and get through it. But I think what I realized very much is like, this is a mental game. And so, and in that mental game is kind of having your body throw a lot of curveballs at you and just visioning this cancer leaving your body. But I thinking also it's how you navigate the community around you, your family, your friends, and making sure that everybody's kind of feeling supported while they're supporting you. So at that point, I really found that hope for me was not just full recovery and resolution of this illness, but being the best version of myself on the days that I felt good. honoring my body so that my body could accept this medication and heal with it, whether it was through nutrition or mindfulness or exercise or whatever I needed to do. And I have been left, you know, in a position where I'm healthy right now, but I'm at high risk for metastatic disease. And there are days where that feels kind of dark and ugly and scary, and I have anger about it. But again, I think I need to have those days, and I need to have that pity party every once in a while, because how do you then have that hope that, no, you know what, I'm going to be okay, and things are advancing, and it might not come back. And if it does, we'll deal with it. So I feel like what my hope is not denial that things could get bad again, but my hope is that there's this really great life that my family and I have grown together, that I've grown with my friends and other people in my life. And that's where my hope sits. So I've really curbed my expectations of it. I don't hope for the unreasonable. I just hope for the best that I can have each and every day. And I feel kind of healthy in that way.
Yeah, because I think that's real, right? I think that's real. How do you think that this perspective that you have and what you've gone through has impacted you as a nurse, as a person working with sick kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think I always had this thing in my mind that, you know, being a parent doesn't make you a better nurse. It makes you kind of understand what being a parent is. I think I work with so many nurses who don't have children of their own. But are amazing nurses and connect with families in a different way that, you know, that is meaningful. And so similarly, I don't think having cancer has made me a better nurse. I think it's made me understand disappointment, very well. And so I think for me, when I have a parent that receives that their child hasn't met an expectation that they thought they would meet, whether it's on a timeline, whether it's forever, whether it's just for now. I think what cancer has allowed me to do is to really understand what that disappointment feels like, particularly when you're throwing all your energy at something, right? Like as parents, all we want is for a happy, healthy child. And so when things don't feel that way, I can only imagine, particularly for our heart parents, what that feels like. I actually can't imagine. But I know that you've sometimes got to feel that disappointment to gear yourself up and go back into the battle and fight and love on your child and get through each day. So I think that's where my experience has really changed me as a nurse, and maybe not changed me, but maybe enhanced things that I already felt and knew. And I think in other ways, it's just that we have to ask questions, right? We have to continually go back to the drawing board and understand, are there other things we can think about? Are there other things that we can consider? Is there some alternative medical path that can enhance what Western medicine is already doing to sustain life? Because I think if we don't hone in on all of those things, we're not doing ourselves much of a service at all.
Yeah. And so sometimes I think, you know, when I'm thinking about hope and we're talking about it, it's like, it's sort of this weird balance between hoping for something that you really want, like your kid to get better, your cancer to go away, but being realistic about the fact that it may or may not. And it's almost like, then it makes hope to me sometimes feel like this fluffy thing that's like we talk about. And I think sometimes it's like an act of defiance. It's like, I'm going to be hopeful in the midst of something that doesn't look so great. And I'm going to put my hope in the love that I have for people in my life. I mean, I'm going to look at it in a different way. And so, you know, what do you think about that idea of like being hopeful as an act of defiance towards the present moment of what you see? Like, despite all of this, I'm still going to have hope.
I think you kind of nailed it on the head, right? Like, I think hope can kind of sound very fluffy, and it's a tough word, right? Because
it is a tough word.
You know, and I think, you know, I remember driving around town in my town during the pandemic, and there was a local company that made these beautiful signs for hope, right? And I had just finished my cancer treatment. You know, my kids are now remote. There's all of these things going on. And I think even now post-pandemic, and you and I were talking about this before, Jess, like what our kids are faced with in this world around them that's really, really tricky and challenging. It's beautiful and like messy all at the same time. And I think, you know, I would drive around town and look at these hope signs. And I remember in the beginning thinking like, oh, wow, we're all on this like hope bandwagon. But then I kind of paused and said, if this is what's bringing us joy at this moment, then so be it. Right. So there's that aspect of hope. But I think when you talk about defiance, that's my definition of hope. Right. Because I can't fix everything that's happened in my body that is happening in my body. I just can't. I can make the best choices in food, nutrition, exercise, mindfulness, all those things. I can surround myself with a lot of joy and that all feels good. But at the end of the day, like our stories have been written to a certain extent. We have the opportunity to change certain aspects of them, right? But there's just things that are out of our control. So my hope is defiance. Like my hope is very much like, these are what statistics are telling me. I refuse to accept that, because to do that then sets my mind-body connection in a really, really bad place. And who wants to feel that way all the time, right? And so it's like I was saying, like having a pity party, I think for anything we're going through in life, like for me, it's my illness or something that my child's going through. But for other people, it's an aging parent. It's a sick child. It's a job loss. It's a financial strain. Like we all have our stuff. But I think when I think of hope, it's defiance of like, yep, I've got X, Y, and Z. I'm not having that define me. I'm not having that dictate what I'm going to do with my life moving forward. Because for me, my hope is exactly like you said, it is in having this privilege of being a mother to my children and watching them go through the normal things that you and I grew up going through, their successes, their downfalls, and being present for that. It's about being a member of my family and making amazing memories that they'll take with them for a lifetime. And it's about being a good friend and a great nurse and supporting my colleagues and our heart families. Like if I can do all those things on a daily basis, which really doesn't involve much, but just being present, I feel like that's where my hope is. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it's just kind of, you know, peaks and valleys.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's really where it's at. And that's sometimes the hardest place to sit, is like in the present moment of what we have. And then I think it's also like, I think what you said, it's like, we get to choose, we can choose what defines us, you know? And I think that even in my own experience, like I've had people say, you know, my son Ethan died almost 11 years ago, which is insane. And you couldn't pay me like millions of dollars to go back 11 years ago. I'd never want to go through the whole thing again. But people will say to me, well, you know, I hope that I can be where you are someday, you know? And so by us being in the present moment and continuing to move forward, that's what gives other people hope that they can do it. And so there are people ahead of me who moved through their grief of losing a child or the grief of cancer or the grief of divorce or whatever people go through, like you said, and they stayed the course and got to a place that, you know, I always say this to people. It's like the cool thing about operating that way is at some point you can look back and throw someone else a lifeline and that gives them hope.
Yeah.
And so it's like we can embody it through the choices that we make in our lives, even in circumstances that we would never choose. We can choose a hopeful story. And I think that that is what makes us human. And I think that's what keeps me going, I guess, in my life.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to, you know, the last few years, because my second round of cancer was in 2019. And, you know, in the beginning, I was just like, all right, positive, positive, positive. And then I think like once I kind of started to really, again, like I said, feel like, wow, this is happening. This is what's going on. It was hard. And for a while after my treatment was done, I didn't really talk about it, right? Like it's not something I kind of walk around with a banner being like, hey, I did this. And a friend of mine, a fellow survivor in my town, we got together this past fall and said, let's do something. Let's put our heads together and just see if we can start something small to give back to Dana-Farber, right? This hospital that has assured our children to have their mothers at home and has really given us great medical care. And so we did a small fundraiser just in our town, within our community. And as we planned this, we're like, oh, okay, so we can put this thing together, but now we actually have to talk about this. And it was the first time I really stood in front of a room of a lot of people that I'm friends with, a lot of people that I was meeting for the first time, and kind of talked about my story and talked about, you know, where research needs to go and where funding needs to go. And it was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life, but it was actually one of the most powerful experiences I've had since my illness. And again, you know, I don't feel like I'm this poster child for hope and like positivity, but I think going through that experience really solidified like the gaps that I had in my grief process and where I still needed to work on things to find hope, and that I haven't fully evolved in that, that there's still ways that I need to kind of get to a place where I'm accepting a lot of what's happened and building on that hope, that I, you know, I think is really an evolving process at that point.
That's very, I think that's beautiful. And I love that we've kind of gotten to the point of this conversation where it's like hope happens in the present moment, I would say, and hope allows us to continue to move forward, but then gives us the opportunity to keep growing through the challenges that we face, so that we can kind of give that to other people, right? And so it's not outcomes based. I think we would both agree on that. I think it's that continuing to move forward. It's that continuing to be present to our life, and but also to say, hey, I'm not going to be defined by this thing. And I think that's, I love that you said that, because I think about this a lot with, you know, moms who have sick kids. And I feel very strongly like that, I don't want that to be my identity. You know, it's part of who I am, but it's not all of who I am. Because if I just want to define myself by illness, whether I'm raising a child that's ill or I'm ill myself or whatever, that's not a very hopeful place to live. You know, I think that we want to be defined by what we do with what we have. And that's really the, honestly, the point of this podcast is like, what do we do with what we got, and how do we make it better, or how do we move through it so that we can bring hope and joy to other people? And so I think that that is like, I love that we've gotten to that point in this conversation where it's like,
yeah,
this is what it is, you know, because this is what's real. I don't think people want to be thrown like a bottle of sunshine when things aren't so great.
No. And I think also like hope isn't desperation, right? Like I think we always think of like, we're in this desperate point. We have to have hope. I feel like, you know, when I reflect on you, and you and I have known each other for so long, and I've seen you through, you know, the tragic loss of Ethan and all the ways that you're, you know, taking care of your boys, of Blake and Chase, and then now what you've gone through with Bodhi. But I never have ever looked at you as like, that's the thing that defines you. Because to me, Jess, whether it's reading your posts or talking, I view you as someone who really has taken a lot of this and are trying to move your energy into really inspiring other people to feel what they're going through, but, and that it's okay to feel those feelings. But that there's this other side of opportunity, that comes from the hope that you've had in your circumstances, right? Because it's, I don't want to speak for you in that way, but that's how I view you. I know that you have those parts to your story. But when if someone were to say, tell me about Jess Lindberg, I would say, you know, she's a force of hope and of really self-reflection and growth and commitment. So I'm glad that you bring it up that way. And I think it's not to downplay what you go through in life. I think it's just, if I walked around as Mina Laron, the mom in town with cancer, like that's not fun. it's special. And, you know, and I think particularly like at a time in my life where there's so many people, whether in my community or through my friends or my family, that are battling cancer, who have lost their battles to cancer. Like I'm not trying to downplay that part, but I'm just saying that there's so much more to being a cancer survivor, being a patient with cancer, than just the illness itself. And if I only focused on that, I would not have the level of hope and defiance that we talked about earlier.
That you do. And the other thing that I think that's really beautiful about what we're talking about, that one of the gifts that comes from being sick or being sitting with sick people is that you're able to sit with people because you've been there. And I think that's a powerful gift that we can give to each other, because if you're not willing to face the crap in your life or the scary things or the stuff that you just don't even want to look at, you're never going to be able to sit with someone else in that place. And, you know, that's a gift that you have given to me countless times, that you gave to Ethan for the year he was in the hospitals. You could sit in there with them, not necessarily because you had a magic wand to make it different or better, but you're able to be there. And I think that is something that we all can do if we are willing to, that does give people hope in a hard time.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, it's always interesting when you tell people what you do for work, or what I do for work, I should say, and they say, oh my gosh, I don't know how you do that, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, the one thing I think that separates a pediatric nurse from any other nurse in the world is, you know, having to really be in a room with more than just your patient, right? You have to be in there. You're seeing families at their most vulnerable time. And a lot of times they're getting information fed through the medical team, but they're looking for to you on how to feel about it and how to process it. And I think, you know, going back to how I was talking about how our program particularly is really empowering parents to be parents in the ICU with holding and assisting with care, it's breaking down that fear that a parent has of hurting their child with tubes in or all of these things that could go wrong. And so I think sometimes when you're not able to articulate how to have people maintain hope, it's in a lot of those actions. It's with being present and just helping a mom bathe her baby or helping a mom hold her baby and just saying, are you okay? Do you feel comfortable? And I think that's something that's very powerful that I observe. And I don't think it takes an expert nurse to do that. I don't think, you know, it's just restricted to that. But I think the beauty of pediatric nursing is being able to be present and to be in a room with people who are going to be there. There's no visiting hours. They're not going to leave at 8 o'clock and come back at 11 o'clock the next day, and really guiding them through that whole journey. Because I have to believe deep down that a lot of those small moments really engage that ability to find that hope that they need in that moment.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I think that's really true. And you all do that. I mean, I've witnessed it. And I think that's really what does make, for anyone listening who is thinking about being a nurse or is early in their nursing career, that is where it's at. It's sitting with people in those moments and giving them hope, you know, moment to moment. So, you know, you do this job, like you mentioned, that people say, well, I don't know how you do this. This is because it is, it's a hard job. I mean, what you all endure, I don't think people can realize, because I didn't realize this place existed prior to Ethan. I mean, it's truly like a war zone many days. I mean, there is still, I mean, I have to tell you, sometimes when I'm at Target, there's this noise there that reminds me of a code bell. I mean,
goodness,
11 years later, like it's still twinges my body because that code bell goes off at least a lot when I was there. And, you know, it's like you're with very sick children. So how do you take care of yourself? Like you're also a person that's trying to be healthy and to take care of your body, and you have to detach from that somehow. We all have to. How do you do that? And what do you do to take care of yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for many years, I think I actually didn't realize. I think, you know, I was just going through the motions of, you know, succeeding in my career, advancing my degree, becoming a wife, becoming a mom. And then all of a sudden, I think it was when my kids were little that I started to realize, wow, there is a lot of trauma associated with this job. It is the greatest privilege of my life, you know. Well, one of the greatest privileges, aside from obviously my family, but, you know, to be a nurse where I work. So I'm not saying it in that way, but I think you start to kind of get into this pattern where there's these stacked events or losses. Clearly, like Ethan dying was something I consider like very heart-wrenching and traumatic for me. You know, and I think it takes time to almost realize, like, again, like this is happening. This is what I'm feeling. How am I going to go about managing this? And I think for me, how I really do a lot of self-care is I have a great group of friends through nursing, like through work, that we've all kind of grown up together. We've been to each other's weddings, our baby showers, bridal showers. We've held each other's babies as newborns. And so we have that tight circle to really work off of. But I think for me, actually, I've committed myself to my days off being time where I'm outside. I'm taking nice long walks in the woods with my dog, which brings me a ton of joy. But just also really committing to self-care. And sometimes it's not going to the gym or going to a yoga class. Mm. Sometimes it's just sitting in silence and kind of being present for myself and realizing, you know what, my heart, my mind, my body just need a minute to regroup and honoring that. It's also, you know, not setting the expectations I have for myself so high. I think I always wanted to be on top of organizing everything and everything's perfect and the house is perfect and everything's done. And I've just realized that that task list is just going to have to wait. If it means me being able to take care of myself, then that's what it is. And the house is a little messy today and it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that comes with being older and a little bit more comfortable in your own skin. And with having a little bit of acceptance that each day doesn't have to be a measure of success. Like some days are just survival. But I think, you know, it's just with many years of being a nurse, my ability to kind of hit the pause button and reflect and make that choice of what my body needs that day to heal and what my mind needs that day to heal is something that's just kind of become part of my everyday life at this point. Because do I like seeing tragedy? I 100% do not like seeing tragedy, but I also feel that the memories that I've taken from my job and from that connection with families are priceless. They're nothing that anybody that doesn't work with me can really understand. I think, you know, parents like you just can understand it, but outside of that, it's four walls that not many people understand. I think it's the same for parents. I think when you're in there, it's very hard to articulate to the outside world what you're going through. Because I think a lot of people hear a children's hospital and they see an ad on TV and maybe they think that that's as hard as it gets. But it's hard, I think, probably for parents just like you to find those friends that you can lean in on who really get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody needs a community of people who can understand what that feels like. It's kind of like my dad said this to me once. He said, you know, it's kind of like you're kind of like veterans. I mean, you're the families and the nurses and doctors, like you all have gone to war together and you have a connection with people because most people have no idea what that feels like. And it's kind of a good analogy, I think, of what that is like. And you do need your people. And then I think it's also like, I think the gift of witnessing tragedy, at least in my opinion, is that it just makes life more precious. And I think it makes the times that we have that are good better. And I think it just, for me, it's like I really value the gift of a day. I really value a healthy kid. I mean, it's never lost on me to watch my son Blake run cross country or Chase play a basketball game. I mean, almost every single time I think about what a miracle it is that they're so healthy to do that. And in some ways you could say, well, that makes you kind of a depressing person, Jessica, because you're thinking about it. Or you could say it makes you richer. And so I think it's how we choose to take the witness of tragedy and what we do with it. And I know you have amazing friends. You do awesome things with your kids. Like you, I think in witnessing your life, I do see you sucking the goodness out of it. And I think that maybe is a gift of your patience.
I do. I mean, I think so much of sucking the goodness out of it 100% comes from the work that I do, right? Because we all have our challenging days. I go to bed each night knowing that, yes, this might be a challenge I had for the day, but my child or my children are at home. They're in their beds. They're not in the hospital. We have jobs. We're afloat. Like, we're good, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it's hard being in a society like we live in right now, where everything's a one click, right? You add it to your shopping cart, you one click, it's done, it's good. And there's, you know, so much through social media that I think paints these perfect pictures, right? But there are no perfect pictures, right? It's just, and so I think you know, it's hard to sometimes find the joy in everything, but it's also really easy to find the joy in the things that are really just easy to find each and every day in front of us. And I agree with you. You know, I think we live in a world where there's a lot of good, but there's also a lot of the push for perfection. And there isn't perfection. And so I think sometimes it's just good to reground yourself. And like you said, just soak it all in. Right. And that can sometimes be a trip. That can sometimes just be, you know, going out to dinner with one of your kids and having a great conversation. It can be watching a rerun on the couch. I love doing that with my kids, like kind of sitting and watching a show and having a bunch of good laughs. And I have one child that loves to do that. I have another child that likes to go out to dinner with me once a month, and that's fine. But I do feel like you have to find that hope in just those little things that you can do every day. And you're right. I think a lot of things that I've seen in my work have, you know, definitely solidified that for me. And, you know, I certainly don't feel under duress to make all these memories with my kids. I'm not on some timeline, but I'm also very, very committed to finding that joy in every day. If at the end of the day, when whatever it, you know, life throws us, if my kids go to bed feeling like they were in a house where they were loved and cared for just for being who they were, then I've done a pretty darn good job. But it's hard. It's not easy in this day and age, I think, to always have that happen.
Yeah. And I think it's a choice. Like we've said through all these things, choosing hope, choosing your story, choosing your day. And I think that's a really something that's important to highlight. And I do think that's a gift of age. I think that's a gift of time. You kind of realize that that is within your agency to choose. And it's not revolved around circumstance, but it's a choice that we make every day to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the 30-year-old version of myself would think I'm crazy right now for saying all of that and listening to all the things you've said. But I do think with age, there's just kind of this inability to just not be able to deal with all the negativity and all the drama. It's just too much. Right. And so you've got to choose that hope and try to integrate that into your daily life.
Yeah. So this season on the podcast, I've asked everyone this question kind of as we wrap up. And so I'm going to ask you, and this season I've been focusing on who we become as people and what we create in our world because of the things that we witness in other people's lives and the challenges that we face in our lives. And so what I'd like to ask you is, what is more beautiful about you, about Mina, because of the challenges that you face? Like, what do you really like about yourself?
Well, I tend to be very impatient with myself. And I think I definitely have those moments where I'm feeling a little bit under the gun, but I think I've been able to take a step back and really be more patient with myself. I've been kinder with myself. It doesn't happen every day. Like I said, there are those days where I'm feeling a little down about things or a little worried about things, but I think I've accepted that. And that's part of being patient with myself. I think if you had asked me before my illness, if feeling those down days was okay, I would tell you it's a sign of failure. And I now feel like going through a lot of emotions is actually a sign of success and a sign of honoring what your body and your mind needs. So I really feel like I've evolved in that regard. I've really tried to keep the things close to me more positive, less toxic. That's also not easy every day, but I feel like it's just given me perspective on that there's lots of small stuff that we can sweat about every day. And at the end of the day, it's really all small stuff. So I feel like that's what I feel like I've taken through what I've been through. It's pretty simple. It's really not anything earth shattering.
But I love it. And I think it's sometimes those simple things that are the hardest for people to do and the hardest for us to incorporate into our life. So I think that that is great. Well, you've given so many amazing thoughts today, Mina, and I love your perspective. I think it's a gift to everyone who will listen to this podcast. And you've been a gift to me. So thank you so much for joining me today.
I am thrilled to be here, and you have equally been a gift to me. So thank you.
Thank you for joining me here on the Heartstrong podcast. Please rate and review this podcast and share an episode that you love with a friend. Because when you do, you help us grow our mission of encouraging people to grow through the challenges of their lives and to live their full potential. We'll see you next time.